Okay, going back to Mr. Randy then. That's sweet. The story of David is a very unique story because to me, because he was so not qualified to do what he was about to become. He was so not in the pecking order to become king. He wasn't physically built the right way. He wasn't skilled in warfare. He wasn't in line lineage-wise. He was way down on the totem pole. He was the least expected to wear the crown. But as all the sons of Jesse, the other seven sons, passed before the prophet Samuel, Samuel said, "No, that's not the one. That's not the one. Nope, nope, nope." I can see him scratch his head saying, "Jesse, is this all your sons? Because the king's coming out of your loins. Is this all the boys you got?" And I can see almost David being an afterthought in his dad's eyes. Well, I got one boy out tending the sheep. Believe me, you don't want him. It's David. We all got them kids with Davids, right? He's David. You couldn't possibly use David. Go get him. They send word for David. David comes, stands before the prophet Samuel, and immediately the prophet says, "That's the one. He's it. Are you kidding me? This young, unexperienced, unqualified sheep keeper is the next king of Israel. How is that possible?" Because God had a plan. See, God has a plan for each of our lives. And don't always go according to the way we plan. None of us want tragedy. Manly surgery is supposed to be a 45-minute in-and-out textbook surgery. You're a perfect candidate. You're only 41. Never had a surgery. You're young. You're healthy. You're strong. In and out. We're talking drive-through Whopper all the way. You'll be out. You know, easy. And I knew something wasn't right in the waiting room. I told Mom, I said, "I need to hear something. It's been 2 hours. Something not right." And they come out. Says we had to open her up. It was things there we didn't know was there before. Things change fast. Things change unexpectedly. But God was still in that room with Melanie. God was still in the room with those surgeons. And God's plan has not changed for Melanie's life, regardless of what they found now. It's not changed. It's not, our plan has not changed at all. Because God already knew it anyway. Now, David was a man that when the king said, "You're the one," he went on about his business, whatever. Well, then we get to a story of where David showed who he really was. David showed who he was. There was a Philistine army camped around Israel that wanted to make war with Israel. And there was one particular Philistine who was a bad mug, and he was big. The Bible, if you do research, puts this guy 9.75 inches tall. I mean, we talking a tall drink of water. We're talking how's the weather up there, right? He's big. He's a warrior. The armor that Goliath wore itself, just his armor, weighed about 125 pounds of armor he had to carry up on his body. 9-foot-plus tall, experienced warrior, experienced champion of defeating people he fought, all this armor, and all the Israelites were afraid of him. And they said they were afraid of him. They may mention they're afraid of him. So let's pick it up here in Genesis. We're going to be skipping around a little bit on the verses, but I'll be in chapter 17. Genesis 17 and 2. I'm sorry. What did I say? Genesis. Wow, I'm going way back. Okay. 1 Samuel. Chapter 7. Why did I say Genesis? 1 Samuel 17. We're going to start with verse 2. "And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side. And there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. This translates to about 9.75 tall. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. That's about 125 pounds. Now skip down to verse 8. We're just doing this for time's sake. "And he stood and cried to the armies of Israel," Goliath did, "and said to them, 'Why are you come out to set war or to set your battle in array. Am not I a Philistine and you servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you and let him come down to me. Pick you a boy to come fight me is what he's saying. And if he be able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, you shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Think about what he was saying. Who's he really defying? The God of Israel. What he really was saying, I defy the armies of Israel. The armies of Israel had God on their side. So you can't defy God and win that battle very many times, I wouldn't think. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all of Israel heard those words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Fear. Boy, fear is real, isn't it? Fear can come into our lives. Fear can keep us bound. Fear can be all we think about, all we focus on. Fear can consume us like a disease inside our body if we let it. Fear is a powerful thing. Here's the armies of Israel who served the one true living God, who had seen God bring them across the Red Sea, who had seen God provide them a manna every day, who had seen God lead them by fire at night and by light by night and fire by day. Cloud by day and fire by night. He had seen that miracle over and over. The same people who had read the stories of their ancestors, their family that said, God did this and God did that. We didn't grow sick. Our shoes didn't wear out. The same God that did all of that. And now they're afraid because one big bad bully in eighth grade stands up and says, send me a man to fight. Well, David overheard this conversation. And David was different than the rest of his brethren and armies and friends. And I think one reason was is because David had already spent time with God and seen God move on his behalf. We'll get to that in a minute. But David was prepared because God had prepared him for this moment and this season. Now let's get down to verse 32. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him, Goliath. Your servant, me, little old David, I'll go and I'll fight this Philistine. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he's a man of war from his youth. And David said to Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him, and I smote him, and I delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and I smote him, and I slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. See, David already had experience. I've done killed a lion. I've done killed a bear. What's this Philistine? I've already been with God. I know who God is. We gotta know who God is for us, not who he is for somebody else. Who is God for us? Is God our God? Yeah, God healed them of cancer. God delivered their child. God set them free. But has he become the God of our lives? Have we been the field? Have we seen God's hand deliver the bear and the lion out of our hands? Have we been there when God gave us victory? Were we there when God set us free? Were we there when God called our name? Return back to knowing who your God is for your life, and that will give you strength to face any giant and step out and say, yes, Lord, I'll stand. Yes, Lord, I'll fight. Yes, Lord, I'll pray. Yes, Lord, I'll serve. Yes, Lord, I'll go and step out of your comfort zone and let God bless you and ordain you and lead you into greater things. We always want others to step up. Somebody else will step up. Somebody else will volunteer. Somebody else will raise their hand. Somebody else will help break that fight up. Somebody else will pray. Somebody else will do this. Somebody else will give. Somebody else will do this. God's called us to be the blessing, us to be the giver, us to be the fighter, us to be the prayer warrior. But I'm not qualified. God wouldn't use me. Oh, yes. He used a shepherd boy who had no experience. I mean, David had less experience than Barack Obama. Barack Obama had 2 years in the Senate. David had no time in the service at all. He was a shepherd boy, minding his own business. And the next thing you know, he's the future king of Israel. And here David says, what are y'all afraid of? I'll step out. I'll fight them. You know why David was so confident? It wasn't a hot-tempered, youthful, I can conquer the world, 18-year-old mentality. David knew who he served. David had an understanding of who God was. And David knew it was wrong that they were letting this enemy defy God's people. I'll fight. And I'm confident I can win. Because I'm not going against Goliath with my experience. I'm going against him with God's presence. I was there when God gave me the strength to kill that bear. I was there when God gave me the strength to kill that lion. I was there. I was the shepherd God used to keep that flock in place. And God will use me here too. I'm going to step out. Verse 37. Thus said, David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion, out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. See, David was already declaring his victory. I'm going to win this. We so many times we exalt the giants of our lives and make them bigger than the God of our lives. There is no giant, whether it's sickness, disease, lack of peace, lack of joy, frustration or fear or torment or addiction or stronghold. There is no giant that is bigger than the hand of God. God covers it all and God can deliver it all. Just like Melly said earlier, from a sore throat to a stage 4 cancer, God can handle it all. He's bigger than any giant. But our fear promotes our giant where our faith promotes our God. It's a big difference. That's how we know where we are spiritually. If all we're seeing is our giants, we're probably living in fear. But if we're seeing God, we're living in faith. Because fear fuels unbelief. And faith fuels belief. Yes, Lord. I can win this. Yes, Lord. I can overcome this because your hand of mercy is upon me and your Holy Spirit lives within me. And the devil is a liar. The Bible says he's the father of lies from the beginning of time. Can't believe anything the enemy whispers to your ear. It's all lies to promote fear and unbelief and doubt. And David didn't listen to all those lies. He saw Goliath, big man, man full of, you know, a warrior, a seasoned warrior. But he did not hesitate to step out and says, I'll fight him because I've been with God. When you've been in the presence of God, you know, the Ten Commandments were on TV the other night, and thanks for the note on that. I watched part of it. I didn't watch it all. It's so long, but I did watch part of it. But y'all seen Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston, the movie, the classic movie. Remember when Moses was in the desert, and they kept telling them that their God lived in that mountain over there? Well, I've got to see this God before I believe it. I've got to hear from this God. You trust a God you can't see? Well, as you know, he was walking along, and that bush caught on fire. And he spoke to him. Well, that was a powerful scene. I got chills in that scene, watching that scene. Take off your shoes, Moses. You're on holy ground. I've heard the cry of my people. Well, what happened to Moses? He went up that mountain not really believing, but he came down. You couldn't have took it away from him. Why? He experienced God for himself. When we ever experience God for ourselves, all of a sudden our faith is kindled, our strength is increased, and we know, yes, God, I've heard from you. I've seen you. I've been on the mountaintop and heard your voice, and I'm coming down changed by that voice. And as you know, we come down gray, completely gray, with the glory of God, a completely changed appearance. And the people down the mountain knew, you've seen our God. What did he say? He said, I'm the one to deliver the people. What a commission that must have been for a convict, for a fugitive, for a man that was on the run, the backside of the desert for murdering his brethren. And now God's saying, you're going to deliver him. See, Moses stepped out of the desert into his destiny. Abraham stepped out of his homeland into his destiny. Daniel stepped outside what the law said he could do into his destiny. Each man or woman of God, the harlot, Rahab, stepped out of her lifestyle to aid and help the men of God. And because she took a chance of her own death, she stepped out and became one of the heroes of faith. Nothing happens till we step out. Peter would have never walked in the water if he hadn't stepped out of the boat and go to where Jesus was. There's a stepping out process for us as God's people. Stepping out in our faith, believing our faith is stronger than our giant or our battle or our storm or our doubt or our unbelief. We just step out and say, here it is, God. I believe you. Stepping out is an act of faith. It requires us to see something more than we can actually see in front of us. It requires us to believe God more than we believe the giant. It requires us to see God more than we see the giant. And David did. David saw God more than he saw Goliath. I bet David's like, so what? He's 9'7". Man, God's infinity and beyond. As old what's-his-name says. Buzz Lightyear. Thank you. God's infinity and beyond. What's 9'7" compared to the God of Israel? Are you kidding me? God held the Red Sea at bay while millions of people and animals crossed over, and the waves stood at his command until he breathed upon them and said, release the waters. That's the God that we serve. Manna on the ground every morning they would get up, and there was breakfast waiting on them every single morning. God kept them, protected them, watched over them. They drunk water out of the rock. Out of a rock. Moses struck a rock and water come gushing out of a stone. They saw God move. They saw what God could do. They saw 10 plagues hit the land of Egypt. Not one plague, just like the Bible says, not one plague to come nigh thy dwelling. Not one plague came nigh their dwelling. As each plague came, as water turned to blood, not their water. As frogs came in their bedroom, not their bedroom. As all the stuff happened, they weren't touched. And when that death angel, the last plague, as death ushered itself down the corridors of that town, as shadows engulfed those doors, and as children and parents cried out and screamed, the ghost was given up. As long as the Israelites were behind the blood, the death angel passed by, and they saw the same God who executed judgment on the enemy execute mercy upon them. Glory to God. That's the God we serve. So how could these Israel armies be afraid of one man? But see, fear promotes a falsehood. Most things we're afraid of won't come to pass. One of my parents' biggest fears, both my parents, they don't like snakes. But you know what? I'm pretty sure I'm safe to say this, that they will not die by the hand of snakes. Snakes will not be their demise. They may be afraid and terrorized of them, but guess what? Snakes are not their enemies. In their mind it is. And my dad may see a 16-inch earthworm and go home and tell mom, I saw an 8-foot copperhead. Because fear does that. It's an earthworm. It's not a copperhead. But because your fear takes over, all of a sudden, whew, it's a giant snake. It's an anaconda over in Wildwood. Anaconda on the loose. Fear promotes that. Some of you don't like spiders, right? Don't like spiders. And you'll see a little spider and you'll swear it's a tarantula. It's a tarantula. It had fur on its legs. It was a gnat. It wasn't even a spider. But fear promotes that. Whatever we're afraid of. See, I don't like elevators. Now, I ride them. I do ride them, but it depends. I don't ride them alone normally. If there's a hospital, a nurse, or a staff member getting on, I usually get on with them. If the elevator opens and nobody's on it, I'll just take the stairs. And I hate when y'all go to the fifth floor. That's 6 flights of stairs I got to go up. That wears me out. Every time I go to see somebody at church, fifth floor. It's actually 6 floors because the fifth floor is the maintenance floor. So you got 6 flights of stairs to get to the fifth floor. So I've got to stay in the hall, man. Get myself together before I walk in and pray. I don't like elevators. You know why I don't like elevators? Because here's my fear. The doors aren't going to open once they close. Now, I've read elevators my whole lives, and that's never happened. It's never happened. Happened one time in Dallas, Texas, but it was my fault. I was on an elevator, going downstairs to go get dinner, and I hit the button. It don't move. I'm like, oh my gosh. I hit the button again. I'm freaking out. It's not doing nothing. Then I realized I was hitting the same button I was on the floor of. So I wasn't doing anything. I was like, oh, okay. Hit a different number. But man, you talking about panic. I was by myself too. And I was like, oh my gosh. I'm going to die in Dallas, Texas by myself in an elevator. They're going to find my body the next morning. I love you, honey. I'm going to tell her goodbye. I mean, all this stuff's going through your mind. I sure did. I'm freaking out. And so our fears can, you know, I don't like slow elevators. That's why I hate Davis Hospital's elevators. I hate them. Because once it stops, it's like 3 minutes, it seems like, for the doors open to me. It stops. And I'm waiting. Waiting. Okay, open. Then finally, real slow. I've gotten out of where I get my hand to crack when it first opens to make sure I can get out. It just, I don't like it. That's a fear I have. But I've never once got stuck on an elevator. Our fears, most of our fears aren't going to come to pass. But the devil tells us that because that fear keeps us in bondage and keeps us from exercising our faith and stepping out. Think how much faith it took for Peter to step out of that boat. I mean, think about that. He's in the boat. He sees some shadow. Who is that out there? Is it a ghost? No, it's not a ghost. It's your Messiah. It's Jesus. Well, Lord, if that's you, bid me to you. Well, come on. come where? Come to me. Is there rocks under this water I can't see? Because I just come to me. Can you imagine that? And Peter stepped out and was walking on top of the water to Jesus and was doing wonderful until his faith was replaced with fear, until he got his eyes off his God and up on the giant. And when he saw the giant around him via waves, wind, storm, and got realizing, oh my gosh, the boat's back here. I'm in the middle now. Jesus here, boat's here, I'm swaying with the wind. What am I doing out here? And immediately, when that happened, he began to sink because he forgot the God that called him was bigger than the giant that scared him. See, God was much bigger than one man Goliath. And you can't defy the armies of God and win that battle. What verse are we on now? 38. And Saul armed David with his armor, and put a helmet of brass upon his head, and he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, assayed to go, for he had not proved it. He hadn't tested this armor yet. And David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them, proved them. So David took it off. I don't need his armor anyway. That's all I was going to win the battle. He took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. I want you to picture this scene. Think how Goliath must have felt, laughing his hind end off. Think about Samuel here, Sam Mash. Somehow I picture David about the size of Sam. I don't know why. I picture David being about the size of Sam. Here comes Sam out here with a little shepherd's bag around his neck and a little slingshot, like, you know, Opie on Andy Griffin. We'll go play games. I mean, really? He's standing out there with a shepherd's bag, 5-foot-something, barely 100-something probably, against 9-foot-something, 400 or 500-pound-something, full of armor, and here's Sam with a slingshot. And he walks up to this big old giant. You ready to get it on? Let's rumble. It's time to rumble! Y'all know that wrestling stuff. Can you imagine that? What was Goliath thinking? I mean, what was he thinking? Yeah. The Philistine came on and drew near to David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy, a fair countenance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with staves? And the Philistines cursed David by his gods. And the Philistines said to David, come to me, I will give your flesh to the fowls of the air and the beast of the field. He's talking some smack. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword, with a spear, with a shield. I don't have none of that stuff. But I do have something pretty important. And you may want to hear this. I come to you, Mr. Goliath, Mr. Enemy, Mr. Giant. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. David's weaponry was not his sword. It was not his ability to shoot a gun or an arrow. His ability came strictly from the name of the Lord he served. I put God before you. Go against that, Mr. Goliath. See if you can penetrate that shield, the shield of my God, who's above everything. That's all he had. This day will the Lord deliver you into my hands, and I will kill you. I will take your head from you, and I will give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day to the fowls of the air, to the wild beast of the earth. Now, David's talking smack, but David can back it up. Imagine this, an old cowboy movie. You yellow belly, I'll sling you down to the buffalo, and they'll chew you up and spit you out, you old nothing. Draw, you big coward. Here's David. I'm going to cut your head off, feed you to the fowls of the air and the beast of the field. That's some pretty direct talk. And all the earth will know that there is a God in Israel. See, God's always got a plan. And everything God does is to point back to his glory. Everything, church. Everything points. This church is only for the glory of God. I preach only for the glory of God. We serve only for the glory of God. Everything we do, everything we say, everything, all of our actions should all point back to God getting the glory for being God. Every healing, every deliverance, every salvation, every miracle, all comes back that people will know there is a God. Stage 4 cancer is gone because there is a God. Lost child is saved because there is a God. Broken marriage restored because there is a God. Addiction is broken because I want all to know there is a God bigger than all of those things. He wants the glory. So David's saying that they'll know there's a God in Israel. Notice he didn't say that they'll know I'm king. He didn't say that they'll know I'm a bad mamma jamma. Didn't say that. He didn't say so. All Israel know that, boy, they're dealing with somebody pretty special here. And my name will go down in all the books, David, who killed the giant. David's words were, I want to do this so that all of Israel knows there is a God. That should be our testimony in life, our witness. There is a God. Everything good that comes into our lives, there is a God. That's why. Not because of us. And this assembly, these people, this congregation, this nation, shall know that the Lord saveth, and not with the sword, and not with the spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he, God, will give you to our hands. Battle's not mine anyway, Mr. Goliath. I'm just going to stand here and mind my own business. We'll say a few words in a minute. I may sling a stone, so you may want to watch out. And then the rest is going to be history. Because God's going to give you to my hands. It came to pass when the Philistine arose and he came. He drew nigh to meet David. And David hastened and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. What is all the people back? What is everybody thinking? You know how when you get fight, people get in a fight and stuff. Everybody gathers around a circle, you know, and watches and stuff and chants and get them, boy, hit them, slap them right there, boy, get back in there. You push them back in the ring, you know, get on them, man. What are they thinking? Here's little ruddy David, shepherd boy, young, not experienced, running toward the army of the Philistines to fight this giant. I wonder if they're wagering on his life. Hey, Bill, I got 6 pesos on this. What you got, brother? I got 6 denarii on this. Gambling. Will he come back alive or dead? Boy, it's a good one. I wish it was a pay-per-view event because this is awesome. We're getting to see it free. What's going to happen? He's not going to. Think about all they were saying. He's not going to make this. What is he thinking? Is he insane? Is he drunk? Is he high? What's going on with this? What's going on with this guy? He's clueless. He's going to die. David put his hand in his bag, and he took out a stone, and he slung it. And it smote the Philistine in his forehead, and the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. Think there was some cheers from the crowd? Wow. Little David stepped out of his comfort zone, stepped out of the fear, stepped out of the doubt, stepped out of what everybody else believed in. He says, I'll fight them. Not only will I fight them, I'm going to kill them. So all people will know that God is the God of Israel. Took one little stone. Now, understand this. I mean, this is a huge giant. Even in our size bodies, a stone slung from a slingshot, in a lot of cases, wouldn't kill us. It would hurt and smarts. But it sunk into his forehead, and he fell flat on his face. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Think about this. Goliath had all this armor, a shield and a shield bearer, big old helmet, big old sword, the right kind of shoes, huge, wide, tall, experienced, snarly, probably had a long Duck Dynasty beard, you know, just, you know, looked mean. And he's standing there. Here comes little David. Be like me here and somebody being down there. Okay, this is who you send me? Are you kidding me? What's your weapon? I got a slingshot. Yeah. Okay. Watch this, boys. Over quick. First round. But then David slung that stone and he fell. So David prevailed over the Philistine, and with a sling and a stone, he smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. He died by the name of the Lord. Therefore David ran, stood upon the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of the sheath, and slew him, and did what he said. He cut off his head. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. They ran like big old babies. Our champion's dead. The main man's gone. He cut his head off, and they saw that. Therefore, David ran. Oh, never mind. They fled. Is that the last verse? Okay. There's a few more, but I'll cut it out. David pursued the Philistines. They killed some more of them and, you know, all that. And they ended up, of course, you know, being freed from the Philistines. And they won the battle and all that good stuff. But the whole point of the message was that David stepped out. He stepped out by faith. He didn't let the size of the giant determine his assignment. I think sometimes we let the size of our giants determine our assignment, determine whether we obey or not. Yeah, I'll trust you in this little thing, God, but that's a pretty big thing. It seems like we have faith on things we're more comfortable with, but when it's out of our comfort zone, we lose that hope. Nobody wants to be diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Nobody wants to get a phone call. Your child has just died. Nobody wants to get, you know, a visit or a phone call, you know, with tragic news. But through all of those things, God is still on the throne. God is still higher, greater, bigger than anything life could ever throw at us, because he holds our tomorrow. He holds our future. No matter what happens here on the earth, church, I know without a shadow of a doubt, this all ends, and I walk into eternal peace with my Savior. And it makes the journey worth walking to know my tomorrow will be unveiled at some point. Step out by faith. Step out of where you're at and say, God, I want to do more for you. I'm going to trust you more. I want to believe in you more. I'm going to serve you more. I'm going to not let the giants keep me bound from following you, from obeying you. I know giants are scary. We all have our fears. We all have our issues. But don't let them define how you live your life. Step out of your comfort zone and let God use you. You'll be amazed how God can use you. It may not be in front of thousands. It may not be in a cathedral. It may not be in a stage where anybody else sees it. But God can use each of us in his own way. Each of us. Be seen. Let God be seen in you to other people by stepping out. You know, Ashley, we talked about this yesterday. My daughter Ashley, she's, Jamie and Christian had a swim. Had swimming lessons and you had a swim. And Ashley couldn't swim yet. And we was at the beach, and this was 4 or 5 years ago, I guess now. 2009. And Ashley was so frustrated she couldn't swim. She saw her brother and sister in the pool swimming, and she was so mad at herself, you know, I can't, at first, you know, I can't swim, you know, done the whiny thing at first, but that didn't last long. Yeah, why don't they come swim with me? And always over there, they can't swim with me. Well, Ashley had enough of that. So you know what she did? She stepped out. She said, well, you know, if they can do it, I can do it. And she went and jumped in there and started swimming because she was so determined. And she's the best woman in the family now. She's like a fish in a pool. She just glides through a pool like a goldfish. I mean, she just glides. They all can swim, but she's the most natural swimmer. She just glides like a mermaid. But you know what? She stepped out. She could have stayed on that trip in her little 3-foot section, whining and complaining about why they ain't playing with me. She said, no, I'm going to go swim. I did the same thing when I was older than Ashley, a little embarrassing. I was 16. But I told you that story of me at the beach with my parents. Last vacation, I remember going really with them on a vacation as a child in her home. 16 years old, we're down at Myrtle Beach. We're in a pool, me and Dad's swimming. I remember in a 3-foot section, you know, water's about right here. Wow. I see kids Ashley's age and smaller jumping off the diving board in 8-foot section. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I had swimming lessons. My mom took me for several years. But you know what my problem was? I had the mechanics of swimming. I was afraid of water. I was just afraid. It wasn't that I didn't know the motions. I was afraid of the water. So I'm standing there at 16 years old, Dad, me, Dad on one side. I mean, you know, nothing like you and your pops when you're 16 standing in water like this looking at each other. And kids going off the diving board in 8-foot section. Wow. So I said, you know what? I know how to swim. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do it. So what I did, I got on the edge of that wall, a 3-foot wall there, and I said, I'm just going to swim until I get to the other side. I'm not going to stop. It wasn't that big a pool. I said, I'm just going to swim and just pretend I'm still in 3-foot water all the way until I touch the other side. And so I did. I took off in the 3-foot doing my swimming, and I knew when I got in the deep water, but I just kept moving. I didn't change my stride, just kept moving. And guess what? The same way this worked in 3-foot, it worked in 8-foot. And I touched that wall, and that was history. From then on, I was doing swan dives off the diving board. No. But, you know, I that was all I needed. And I've been in deep water ever since. So Ashley got that from me. That's pretty cool. I was a little older when I finally kicked in on me. But I stepped out. And I thank God because I had to break that fear of water. And now I love deep water. I love swimming deep water in shallow water. I love going down, and you know, I love it. Going off the diving board, I love it. But we got to step out, church. We got to step out. Now, I'm not suggesting if you go jump in a pool tonight and drown, because I'm not going to take, I will not be sued for that. I'm just saying, step out of your comfort zone and trust God. Just step out. Boy, David sure did. And now we read about that story all these thousands of years later, as Manley said, still relevant today, of this little unqualified shepherd boy defying a seasoned warrior because of God's hand. So when God sees a shepherd boy like he did David, he may see a king. When he sees you, he sees much more than an ordinary factory worker, business person, teenager, whatever he sees. There's a much deeper side to you than what you see in yourself. God has such a destiny and a season ahead for all of his people, but we got to step into that season and